This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. Joan Butterstein of Littleton knew the day had come. At 81, her lung cancer was advancing. She'd recently fallen and broken her hip. The former dancer was losing her independence.
After I take the final medication, I will be in bed, and very shortly, the heart should stop. I will go to a deep sleep, and soon thereafter, the medicine should make the heart stop, and it will be over.
3 days after that was recorded by the PBS program Frontline, Butterstein took her own life, surrounded by her husband and her daughter, Kathleen Coulter. Kathleen joins us, along with Karen O'Connor, who put together tonight's episode of Frontline about assisted suicide, which remains a highly controversial issue in this country. I asked Kathleen to tell me about what she calls her mother's hastening.
I spent the night before. We had one of her favorite meals. We had a lovely evening, the three of us together. And then the next morning when we woke up, my mother was always very well prepared for anything and everything. We had rehearsed the day of the hastening many times, something that Compassion and Choices recommends you do.
Compassion and Choices is a group that provided your mother with information about how to end her life.
Absolutely. So they recommend that you rehearse, and we had rehearsed quite a few times what to do and what order you take the medications, because she had three separate medications that she needed to take. One was an anti-nausea so that she wouldn't throw up the lethal medication. The next one was an anti-anxiety medication so that she would be more relaxed when she took the lethal dosage.
And what kind of medication was it?
You know what? I couldn't tell you. But it was medication that was recommended by Compassion and Choices. It was purchased online without a prescription. They sent it to her in the mail.
How many pills did she take in all?
I think the lethal dose of medication that she had to take was 60 pills.
But that was just the third dose?
That was the third dose, yeah.
So 60 plus the two rounds beforehand.
Correct.
And how long did it take for her to pass away?
After she took the lethal medication, it was a little over 4 hours. That was the hardest part for me, was the waiting. But I have to say that the person that Mom had worked with primarily at Compassion and Choices, I would call her a counselor, was on the phone with me for three of those 4 hours. She cleared her schedule for the entire day, because actually after they take the lethal dose of medication, it can take up to 24 hours before they pass away. My stepfather was lying in bed with my mother, and he didn't want any interaction basically with the people from Compassion and Choices. That was just his choice.
Were there things you did to protect yourself in some way legally? Because as you learn from the film, this can get dicey. You know, people have been prosecuted.
Bottom line is, I did nothing to help her. I was there to support her, to hold her hand, to, you know, give her a hug and a kiss, tell her everything's going to be okay. But I did nothing. Art and I did nothing to assist her. She did all the preparation. She took all the medications herself. We did not spoon feed it to her. We didn't touch it, basically. She had to do everything herself. Therefore, we are not legally responsible.
Well, I'd like to, at this point, bring in the filmmaker behind this episode of Frontline. It's called The Suicide Plan, Karen O'Connor. I want to start with what seems to be the premise of this film. And that is that in places where no form of assisted suicide is legal, so every other state really besides Washington and Oregon, people go underground. That's a phrase you use in your film, go underground. What do you mean by that?
Well, it is that. I mean, every year in this country, people are looking for and receive assistance in ending their own lives in a number of ways. But the vast majority of those people don't live in the two states where physician-assisted suicide is legal. And so for those people, what do? And often they turn instead to friends or family, as you see in the film with Hunt Williams and Bruce Brodigan's story, where family members help a loved one end his life. And then If they don't do that, they turn to two organizations that exist in this country, Compassion and Choices and Final Exit Network. Those are the two Right to Die groups that will help people to figure out how to hasten a death. People are kind of making these decisions every day and having to figure out and navigate a pretty confusing legal and medical landscape.
I mean, speaking of the confusing legal landscape, you mentioned Bruce Brodigan. He winds up being charged after helping his father.
That's right. Bruce Brodigan is a 56-year-old man who helps his then 82-year-old father, a retired attorney with sort of mid-stages of vascular dementia, to end his life. His father was determined to avoid what he believed would be the kind of anguish of Alzheimer's. And Bruce is there with his father on the day of his death, and his father had obtained this book called Final Exit, which is a how-to manual written by Derek Humphrey, the founder of the old Hemlock Society. And it turns out the medications that George Brodigan used to end his life were prescription medications that belonged to his son Bruce. And because of that, he was eventually arrested and charged with second-degree manslaughter and could have potentially faced up to 10 years in prison if convicted.
Mr. Brodigan did not wind up being prosecuted, correct?
He did not. It's interesting, though, these individuals are charged. Often it's prosecutors want to make them go away. They feel as if they're compelled because there are laws against them, but the laws themselves are often kind of murky in terms of how one defines aid or assist. And even when they do go to trial, juries are often reluctant to convict.
Well, Kathleen, your own story and your mother's story, and specifically the involvement of your stepfather, I think represents this ambivalence. So your stepfather, who's Catholic, says that for him, if he were to end his life like your mother did, it would be a mortal sin. Those are his words. And yet he supports her decision. But it's like this conflicted
approach. Absolutely. It's been conflicted all along. I mean, the reason that he supported her was because of his love for her. For him, he could never do it.
Karen, this documentary includes cases where the family and friends are hugely supportive of their loved one's decision to end their life. But you also have some cases where those around the person are not supportive at all of the decision. And one points to, I think, I don't know if it's a slippery slope or a fear that a lot of folks have, which is, if you allow for assisted suicide in some way, people will make decisions that aren't necessarily the best for them, or they'll make rash decisions to end their life when, if they waited 2 weeks or if they waited a month, they'd feel better, they'd be better. And there is, in your film, a woman who takes her own life who, it turns out, suffers from mental illness, and likely wasn't as sick physically as she claimed to be. Tell us about that.
Yes, it's the Gina Van Voorhis story. It was a 58-year-old woman who'd had a long and troubled psychiatric history, in and out of psychiatric hospitals most of her life. That story is in the film, and it is placed where it is exactly for the reasons you mentioned. The film in its entirety is also looking at the issue of the dangers of the slippery slope. And so the film is structured in some way. It goes from the kind of clearer, more straightforward cases. For example, Joan Butterstein is suffering from a terminal illness and is actually dying, to, as the film progresses, more and more difficult and complicated cases. John Selmer in Georgia, who had died with the help of Final Exit, was not terminal. He had a disfigurement and great kind of discomfort from throat and cancer operations, but he was in no way terminal. And then, as you say, Jaina Van Voorhis is the next and even more complicated story, which is what options, if any, should be available to somebody with depression or psychiatric illness. And it's one of the kind of risks and dangers of it staying underground, per se, is that perhaps people who might otherwise be talking to physicians or people who know them are instead keeping it kind of secret And does that itself guarantee that this might swing a little too far in some cases?
What are some of the other arguments against assisted suicide?
Other than the slippery slope?
Yeah.
I think that it's morally wrong. I think that question, the moral dilemma, that that no one has the right to end another person's life is, or to be a part of it, is certainly fundamental. I think the physician question, the proverbial physician should do no harm, is also obviously an inevitable part of the debate. And then even a more interesting and probably much subtler question is that, does the willingness to be present for someone's death in some indirect way, is it a kind of implied pressure? Are we normalizing something that shouldn't be normalized? Suicide has always classically been the one thing that any of us can do, but it's always done alone. It's never been done in the presence of someone.
Well, Kathleen, you were in some ways very private about helping your mother and her life. You didn't tell a lot of people. You kept it really in the family and with maybe some close friends. But here you are on a Frontline documentary speaking with us. Is it that enough time has passed? How long, by the way, has it been?
Her hastening was on May 20th of this year.
Of this year. So it hasn't been long at all, really.
It hasn't been very long. And it's been kind of leading up to this, which has put another real twist on the grief. This program that's airing tonight is, I haven't seen any of my mother's film. I haven't seen any of what she said. So it's really going to be emotional for me.
That is to say, you've not seen a moving image of your mother since her death.
No, I haven't.
And watching this on TV will be the first time you've seen her kind of animated in that way.
Yes.
On film. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about the filming, but I was not in the room with her when Karen was here filming. You know, either the one day I wasn't able to be there for the filming, and then the next time, 3 days before her hastening, when Karen was here, I was outside, sitting outside while they were filming her. So I have no idea what she said.
Karen, Massachusetts just voted down a law which would have legalized assisted suicide. A lot of opposition came from doctors who didn't want to be in the position of assisting someone with their death. Again, Washington and Oregon have these laws on the books, but no other state. In the end, did you come to some kind of conclusion for yourself? You know, what you might recommend a state do when it comes to laws around these issues?
Well, it's interesting. My co-producer, Mary Novasky, and I, through the course of the filming, and we were involved in the film for over a year, we had these ongoing discussions and arguments, probably reflective of very much what goes on across the country. We swung back and forth, honestly. Massachusetts, that vote was 49 to 50. It's a complicated social question, and we, like anyone else, weren't immune from those same kinds of confusions, I suppose.
Well, Kathleen, I wonder just what you'd like to see from your own state, I mean, here in Colorado, that would have made this easier.
You know what? I can't make a choice for my state. I don't know if I would vote for it or not. And to turn that around a different way, if I became terminally ill, okay, I would definitely use compassionate choices, but I wouldn't feel comfortable making that decision for someone else.
This isn't just an issue that, you know, two people can be on two different sides of, but one person can be on different sides.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Ladies, thank you so much for being with us.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for inviting us.
My pleasure as well. Thank you.
Filmmaker Karen O'Connor produced tonight's episode of Frontline, which airs at 9 on Rocky Mountain PBS. It features Kathleen Coulter of Thornton, who was by her mother's side when she ended her life while battling lung cancer. We'll be right back with Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio.